Ramblin'Wild.com.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, let's do this. Get set. Headed for the open
door. This is Running Flat Radio with Chris Uzinski on AM 800 CKLW, the information station.
That day, for no particular reason, I decided to go for a little run. So I ran to the end of the road.
And welcome to Running Flat Radio. It's Chris Uzinski. Kelly Steele is actually on assignment tonight and not joining us. But you know what? What an exciting show we have this week. If you're not familiar with Running Flat Radio, it's a show all about, believe it or not, running. And running in this community and abroad. And it's all about just getting off that couch and getting into your first 5K. Walking in is okay. Last is a great place to be as well. So don't fear ever coming in last at a race. And very few of us ever come in first. So don't worry about your time and just enjoy it, because it really is a great social movement to be involved in running and walking in this community. Meet a lot of great people. And I also raise lots of money for many charities that are out there. So Running Flat Radio is on every week, and we usually have some really interesting guests on. Last week we had Dr. Melissa Kidd-Dottillo on talking about eye safety. We got a lot of feedback on that, especially in regards to wearing sunglasses and safety glasses when you do run in the rain or on trails. So this week, we believe it or not, a runner was hit by lightning during an ultra race and survived it and came in third in that race. Adam Campbell joins us live on the phone at about quarter after the hour, and we're gonna talk to Adam about what it's like being hit by lightning and then actually coming in third. Adam is a very accomplished athlete, professional triathlete for a number of years, and now an ultra runner out of Calgary. So we'll have him on, and then Michael Doyle will be joining us at quarter to the hour with a whole bunch of news from Canadian Running Magazine. Michael is the editor-in-chief of Canadian Running Magazine, talking about what's going on in the world. So this is, in the Windsor area, Color Run Week for us. It's a huge weekend here in the city. You know, the rigs start moving in tomorrow morning to start setting up Color Run. And the Color Run event is a very, very special event. It was Windsor's largest ticketed single-day event in their history last year, and this year it's shaping up to be comparable in size. So we're really, really excited to have the Color Run back in Windsor, have everybody out there. And what I love about Color Run as a race director is it's magic to watch. It's a lot of work to put on, but it really is, with the size of the crew and the equipment and of course all the participants, is really one of the most amazing events you'll ever see in the world. And of course, when we start throwing the color optically, it's one of the most amazing things you'll ever see. The Color Run will be in town. We're doing race kit pickup at Riverfront Plaza in downtown Windsor on Friday. And the race itself and the run itself is at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. It goes up Riverside Drive towards the Ambassador Bridge and then back down the Riverfront Trail. And then you come back in to Riverfront Plaza for all the color throws and the celebration. It's going to be an awesome time. If you want to register, there are still some spots left. When you register, use the special code RUNNINGFLAT for your discount. All one word, all in capital letters, $10 off your registration. So it's a good deal. It's a really good deal. So come on out. We'd love to have you. If you've never participated in an event before, or a running event or a walking event, this is really the event you should do, because it's like nothing else you'll ever see in the world. It's a massive production, and it's all here on really what is one of the most amazing riverfront areas that you could ever do an event. The Color Run is, for all intents and purposes, the largest event in the world, registering over 2 million people in almost 300 markets globally. And, you know, when you look at some of the properties that the Color Run takes place, when it's the Needle in Seattle, you look at the Historic District in Philadelphia, and even the Eiffel Tower in Paris is their finish line. This is one of the most iconic places that you could do a run, and it looks incredible on the Detroit River, on the skyline in Windsor. It's a fabulous event, and people travel in from all over North America to actually do the Color Run here in Windsor because of that, because the course is so amazing. So if you get a chance, you can go through runningflat.com and hit the Color Run link that's already there on the runningflat.com website. And like I said, the discount code is runningflat, all one word, all in caps, and we'd love to see you out there. So a couple other things that I want to talk to before we get Adam Campbell on is looking at Run for Heroes and kind of where you should be at in running. Run for Heroes is really the big Heroes weekend in Amherstburg is really what you want to look at. Lots of events to partake in. Of course, there's the marathon, which is a 42-kilometer marathon, a Boston qualifier. There's the half marathon, which is well on its way to selling out this year there, and that's also on September 21st. And then there's the 10K, which also sells out quite quickly, and that's on the Sunday. The Sunday, which is a really, really special day this year, is actually September 21st, which is World Alzheimer's Day. Which is a UN-sanctioned day internationally. So it's really fitting that our marathon is actually on that date this year. The Saturday is really shaping up to be an incredible day, because what we have is the 5K, which goes in and out of the fort at Fort Malden in Amherstburg, goes up and down the river. It's the Run for Superheroes 5K, where people dress up as their favorite superhero or villain, and you can actually put teams of people in for a discount. That event will probably somewhere between 600 and 700 people at that event. And what we've added this year to that event, which is completely new and completely new to the region, is a kids marathon. Now you're wondering, how does a kid run a marathon? Well, what happens is, this is for school age kids. They register for free on runningflat.com at the Run for Heroes site. When they register, they download a pledge form for a minimum of a $50 pledge that they have to raise for the Alzheimer's Society. On the back of that pledge form is a tracking form where they track how many kilometers they run between now and September 20th at the event. What you want to do is do 41 kilometers any which way you can. Whether it's half a kilometer at a time walking or running, or a kilometer at a time, or 2 kilometers at a time, it doesn't matter. You just got to get that 41 kilometers in between now and September 20th. And what's amazing is you come and run that last kilometer of the 42-kilometer marathon with us at the 5K, and when your child crosses the finish line, they get a special kids marathon medal from the Run for Heroes. And it's just a really exciting event. I think in the first week we had like 60 kids sign up for the event. It's just going to be crazy. But what a great response we're getting from parents, and the kids are really excited about doing this. And what we really hope is that the parents actually stay and maybe get involved in the 5K, or who knows, maybe they want to come into town and do the 10K or the half marathon the next day. It's a great event. So the Run for Heroes weekend, for more information, you can go to runningflat.com to get more information. There's also an expo that we do, a health expo where you do your race kit pickup. Carla Lozon Abson joins us from Running Flat. Now we still got a couple spots left for expo exhibitors.
We do, yep.
And what's really nice about it is our health expo is inside the Libro Credit Union Athletic Complex in Amherstburg. It's on the indoor soccer field. So people go in, they pick up their race kit, their bib, their shirt, and then we also have a number of vendors like New Balance and a number of other folks who are there as well this year.
Yeah, it's a really nice venue, actually. A lot of people come in that maybe they're not even runners, but they come in and check it out. And
it's open to the public.
It is. It's open to the public. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. But it's our third year there. So hopefully this year we'll get more people in and We're getting a lot of new vendors in this year, so it'll be exciting.
And if you're interested in being an exhibitor or want more information on the expo, you can reach Carla at carla@runningflat.com for more expo information. And all the other information about the race is at runningflat.com. What I want to do just before we go to break is I want to do Song of the Week. And the Song of the Week, in respect to can you hear that?
Yeah.
Can you hear that? From AC/DC, Thunderstruck. Up next, Adam Campbell talking about his lightning strike and his third place in an ultra marathon. You're listening to Running Flat Radio on AM 800 CKLW.
The Lynn Martin Show.
I listen to this stuff and my head's going in circles.
If you're thinking about it, we're talking about it.
I have to call and maybe put another perspective on this whole thing.
On Wednesday's show, many mom and dads take it for granted here in Canada. We've had it for a long time and ours just keeps getting better. They are just starting to address it in the United States. We're talking parental leave next time.
When you hear about it, don't just talk, react. The Lynn Martin Show, weekdays 9 till noon on AM 800.
Sometimes it's better to take the route less traveled. Book a flight with Porter by Thursday, and you could save on flights to Ottawa, Montreal, and the U.S. just by connecting through Toronto's small downtown airport. Then enjoy a free snack and beverage in our airport lounge while counting all the money you saved at flyporter.com, your savings connector. Some conditions apply, like booking by Thursday. Porter, flying refined.
Discover a new way to bank. Windsor Family Credit Union is now open in downtown Windsor. Their family of free checking accounts is just one example of the financial, investment, insurance, and trust services developed with your financial needs in mind. With a friendly greeter, cafe lounge area, no teller lines, and private offices for all financial transactions, WFCU's retail locations offer a service environment that stands out from the rest. Visit Windsor Family Credit Union in downtown Windsor at the corner of University and Olette Avenues today. WFCU, like a bank, only better.
It's easy to do more with Save-On Energy.
It is going to be a hot one out there.
Any contractor can tell you that the worst day of the year for your air conditioner to break down is the hottest one. But a participating contractor in the Save-On Energy program, like me, can help you save with up to $650 in incentives. Just use a participating contractor to install an energy-efficient heating and cooling system. Call us at 1-855-592-HVAC or visit saveonenergy.ca/HVAC. Funded by the Ontario Power Authority and offered by your local electric utility.
Now the forecast from the AM 800 Weather Center. Tonight, clearing, a low of 13. Tomorrow, mainly cloudy, a 30% chance of showers in the afternoon, a high of 21. Wednesday night, a 30% chance of showers early in the evening, then clearing, a low of 11. Thursday, a mix of sun and cloud, a high of 25. Friday, wall-to-wall sunshine, a high of 27. Once again, clearing tonight, a low of 13, mainly cloudy tomorrow, 30% chance of showers in the afternoon, and a high of 21.
Hey! What makes your brain so cold it shatters in three? A froster! What causes you to shiver and shake like a twerking T-Rex? A froster! What makes you stronger than a snowman's bad breath slapping you in the face? A froster!
The Max Froster. An icy cold drink now available in up to 12
Frost-delicious flavors!
A froster may not cause all that stuff, but it will make you cooler than a giant weeping yeti.
Frozen tears of joy!
Max Convenience Stores. Need it? Got it, Max.
Looking to start running? Strap on a pair of comfortable shoes. Now put one foot in front of the other and keep going. It's that easy. This is Running Flat Radio on AM 800.
And welcome back to Running Flat Radio. Chris Uzinski here. It was kind of a joke to go out, and we always do a song of the week, a motivating song to put on your iPod and to listen to while you're running. But we did do Thunderstruck by AC/DC because our next guest, Adam Campbell, an ultramarathoner from the Calgary area, was struck by lightning while doing the Hard Rock 100 in Colorado and still managed to finish that ultra 100 miler third. Which is incredible. Adam, welcome to Running Flat Radio.
No, thanks. Thanks for that intro too.
Yeah, dude, you're hit by lightning. So let's talk a little bit about what was going through your mind, because it's a 100 mile ultra that crosses through a mountain range, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it's got about 68,000 feet total of cumulative elevation gain and loss in all at really, really high altitudes as well. So it's an average elevation of 11,000 feet.
Jeez.
With a few five peaks over 13,000 feet over in it.
And there's different aid tents as you go along the course where you check in, correct?
That's correct, yeah. And you can get a bit of food there and a bit of shelter if you need it.
So somehow you didn't need it when you left that shelter. Let's go through that story of what exactly happened up there.
Yeah, so coming into the previous aid station, it was, you know, it was still really warm out. The weather, it was still daylight. You know, a race this long, you know, it took me 26 hours to complete. So, you know, you're running through the night. So I left that last aid station. And I just moved into third place. So I was pretty excited because this is a world-class field. You know, one of the most prestigious ultras in the world. So I was feeling pretty good about myself, but I still knew I had a lot of racing to go. So I was trying to stay pretty calm and stay on top of my nutrition and making sure I was moving forward efficiently.
I'm sorry, Adam, what mile was this?
So the previous aid station was about at 52 miles or so into the race. And then I was heading up towards the high point in the race, which is a 14,000 foot peak called Handy's Peak. And that's about 56 miles into the race.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. Which is, that's already quite a lot of running, you know.
at altitude.
Yeah. At altitude, exactly. Running up there, it's, you know, it's got, I went from 9,000 feet to 14,000 feet. So that's 5,000 feet of vertical gain over about 5 or 6 miles. And we're heading up, and the sun was starting to set, and the sky, this is in the San Juan Mountains in Colorado, which are just beautiful, jagged peaks, really, really picturesque mountains. And it's heading up, and the sunset was incredibly, this beautiful, vibrant red color, but you could also see a storm pattern starting to run through, you know, with these angry-looking clouds. But mostly we're just, you know, my pacer and I, you're allowed to pacer through certain sections of the race for
okay.
safety reasons. So it's a teammate who accompanies you through these sections because it's so explosive. There's no option for rescue really. So, you know, it's better to have a teammate there just in case something does happen to you. So I picked up a pacer at the previous aid station, a really good friend of mine, Aaron Height. And we were running up, and we were both sort of admiring this view, but we were also keeping a cautious eye on the clouds coming through. And we made our way up into the alpine, so above tree level, and, you know, there's less and less shelter up there. And the sun's starting to set, and the same thing, we're just, you know, this beautiful, amazing sunset in the mountains. It's really special. But we could see lightning starting to strike a previous mountain, the next mountain range over. And the rain started to come down and the temperature dropped. So we stopped and put on rain jackets and put on our headlamps for the night section because we were going to be running through the night at that point. And as we were heading up to the final ridge towards the summit, we actually saw lightning strike the summit. And we both knew that things were pretty serious at that point. But because there's no shelter around us, the best option was to head up and over the mountain. That's our safest bet.
And how far are you from summit and going over that peak at this point in time?
At that point, we're maybe only 400 meters from the summit.
So you guys are looking at each other saying, okay, let's gun it. Let's get over this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. With this type of event, you know, we're wearing very minimal clothing already. So our biggest safety net is speed. So the faster we can get up and over a mountain, the safer we're likely to be.
And
if you're moving forward, that's a good thing. You want to be moving forward. You don't want to be standing still unless you've got shelter.
And is the storm behind you so you can't go back?
Well, going back was just as far as going forward. So it made more sense to move forward than to go back down somewhere. But yeah, the storm had been over the previous mountain range and it just blew through really, really quickly. And very unusual on this mountain range to have storms at night. Normally they happen during the mid-afternoon.
Right.
So we both have a lot of mountain experience. So we both knew that, you know, we made the right call. It was to push up and over the summit. But the second we hit the summit, all of a sudden we heard this incredibly loud crack. It was deafening. It was like somebody shooting a gun right by our ear. And we had this really vivid white light, and we both found ourselves knocked to the ground. And my headlamp had exploded, and I heard Aaron say, my head, I was hit. And we both sort of lay there and we swore, you know, we, and it's the first thing you do when something like that happens. And then we both sort of, we sat there sort of almost in shock, like, did that really just happen? Were we just struck by lightning? And yeah, I mean, that's in fact what happened. We were struck by lightning.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So how long were you guys on the ground?
Not very long at all. We both knew that, you know, the situation was pretty, pretty precarious at that point. And so we, you know, neither one of us panicked, really. I started to have a little bit of a panic attack, but I calmed myself down really quickly because I knew that we just had to get out of there because we're still in the middle of this huge electrical storm all around us. Lightning was still going off around us, and it was getting really, really cold, and the rain was coming down really hard. But my headlamp was out, and, you know, we both made sure that we were okay. Yeah. Like, we checked in with each other, and, you know, said, how are you doing? We both assessed that we were both fine. And because my headlamp was out, I actually had a spare headlamp in my – we have a little running pack on, but it was underneath my rain jacket, and we just wanted to get the heck out of there as quickly as possible. So Aaron quickly got in behind me, and we ran off the mountain. And there's no trail up there. It's, you know, it's all this rocky scree, really big boulders, really, really steep terrain, and a pouring, you know, at night in the pouring rain with, you know, vicious winds and obviously lightning.
You're above the tree line, and you're two lightning rods running down a mountain.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really scary.
Two wet lightning rods running down a mountain.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And apparently we know that we conduct electricity now, too, so yeah. So yeah, you know, it really was, though, just, you know, get the job done, just get out of there as quickly as possible. And I'm really lucky. Aaron, one reason I chose him as a pacer is that he has a really calm demeanor. So he was the perfect person to be in that kind of an environment with. And he's obviously very, you know, technically capable as well. And really, really scary and really, really strong bonding moment for both of us.
I guess. So what's the reason for all this? You guys survived a lightning strike on top of a peak during a storm. I mean, something that the average person, first off, doesn't get hit by lightning, but sure is to walk away from it and continue running, I mean, at a motivated pace to come in third.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the motivation was survival at that point. So, we were definitely booking it down there as quickly as possible. And once we got down a little lower and we actually found a bit of shelter in under a rock, I swapped out my headlamp, put on the new headlamp, and we checked in with each other once again to make sure that we were in fact okay. Aaron said he could feel some tingling in his arm, but we were both just really cold. So one of the reasons for moving was also just to stay warm. You know, it was really, really cold. So the faster we're moving, the warmer we got. And
was the only damage the headlamp? I mean, did you guys, anyone get it burned or anything else?
No burns. It wasn't a direct hit.
Okay.
So I guess there's a few different types of lightning strikes. So one of them is a direct hit, and others are rebound hits. So what had happened was it was obviously a rebound hit. And the strike we'd seen previously, it wasn't a single bolt. It looked more like tentacles of light hitting the summit. So it was obviously something like that.
You are one lucky man, Adam. You are one lucky man.
I'm well aware of that, yeah.
we're going to take a break right now. Will you stay with us through the break? Because I also want to talk to you about the Sky Running series.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
great.
For sure. Absolutely. You're listening to Running Flat Radio on AM 800-CKLW.
Where Windsor-Essex speaks.
I'm absolutely appalled that these people would do something as such.
AM 800-CKLW.
Everyone makes mistakes. That's understandable.
The information station.
It's time to trade in, trade up at your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram retailer. Where a Dodge Grand Caravan, Canada's number one selling minivan, starts at just $19,995. With 0% financing for 36 months. And so does Dodge Journey, Canada's best-selling crossover. Plus, step up to their ultimate packages, and you get DVD, backup camera, and up to $10,000 in total discounts. The Trade-In Trade-Up event. See your Dodge retailer for details.
It's 7:30.
From the AM 800 News Center, your number one news source in Windsor-Essex, an information update with Paul Pedro.
A news conference tomorrow morning is expected to have the chair of the Downtown Windsor Business Improvement Association announce that he will run for mayor of Windsor. Larry Horowitz told AM 800 News in April he was considering a run for mayor and will announce his political intentions tomorrow morning. A motorcycle has been impounded and a 37-year-old Windsor man's license has been suspended for 7 days after OPP officers clocked a motorcycle going more than 180 kilometers an hour this morning on the 401 near the Highway 77 exit. And a $40,000 fine has been issued against a commercial fishing boat captain from Leamington for fishing violations. Melchior Pace pleaded guilty to violating the terms of his commercial fishing license and failing to maintain an accurate and complete fishing logbook. AM 800 Sports, the MLB All-Star Game is in Minnesota tonight with Tigers star Miguel Cabrera starting at first base. That game is about a half hour away. The Windsor Clippers continue their playoffs against Orangeville tonight at 8 o'clock at Forest Glade Arena. And former NHLer Tony Granato is the new assistant coach for the Red Wings. From the AM 800 Weather Center, tonight clearing a low of 13. Tomorrow mainly cloudy, a 30% chance of showers in the afternoon, a high of 21. Right now in Windsor Essex, 20 Celsius, that is 68 Fahrenheit. I'm Paul Pedro, AM 800 News.
When you're able to focus your mind and your body, anything is possible.
From 5K runs to half marathons
to the full 26.2 miles.
We talk about it all on Running Flat Radio, Tuesdays, 7 till 8 on AM 800.
And welcome back to Running Flat Radio. Chris Uzinski on the line with us right now is the luckiest runner alive, Adam Campbell, who came in third in the Hard Rock 100 in Colorado. And we were just talking about at one of the top peaks, as you were summiting, you got hit by lightning. And then once you actually recouped and made sure you guys were okay, you ran down the mountain. So I got to tell you, a number of years ago, Adam, I was up in Mount Tremblant area. It was the summer, and I was at the bottom of the mountain, and a storm had hit, and lightning hit the top of the mountain and killed somebody on the top of the mountain. And I never, ever forgot that. And as a race director, I get really, really nervous around thunder and cells, and it's such a high priority in running flat for our runners' safety, that in any hint of a storm, I mean, we're right on top of trying to figure out exactly how we're going to move people off the course and implement those safety plans that we've been working on. So really, really sensitive to this topic, and to hear that you got hit and survived it is incredible.
Yeah, no, well, that, I mean, that same weekend, two people were killed in Rocky Mountain National Park, which isn't all that far away, in the same, you know, it's in Colorado as well. And four other people were seriously injured hiking on top of Long's Peak. So, yeah, no, I'm really aware of how fortunate I am. But one of the aspects of this race is it's just as much a mountaineering experience as it is a running race. And they expect a really high level of self-sufficiency. And they are very clear with that in the race directions. And just to get into the race, you have to show them a certain level of, you know, mountain proficiency and ultra running proficiency. So it's
So let's talk about your ultra career as well. So you've been a runner for a number of years, and you're a professional triathlete.
I was previously, yeah. So I mean, all through high school, I ran cross country and cross country skied and did sports like that. And then when I turned 19, I made the junior national triathlon team. To go compete at the World Championships in Montreal. And I was like, this is the coolest thing in the world. You know, I get to wear a Canadian uniform, I get to compete at the World Championships. It's kind of awesome. And from there, I was actually at Queen's at the time, Queen's University.
Yes.
And I got to meet Simon Whitfield, who just won a gold medal. And I was known as being a decent runner, and I did a little run workout with him. He's like, oh, you should come out and stay with us in Victoria. And I just couldn't get that out of my mind. And so that December, I actually dropped out of school, hopped on a plane to Victoria, and literally landed at Victoria Airport and had Simon's number. I called him and was like, hey, Simon, it's me. I'm at Victoria Airport. You said I could come stay with you. Ended up living with him for the next 3 years, competing on the World Cup circuit. So, yeah, I mean, one, that's a testament to the type of person he is, that he'd come pick me up, this guy he met once. But also just... yeah, I mean, so that was a really, really important time in my life. So I got to compete on the World Cup circuit, and I was Canadian national duathlon champion a couple times. I was on the national development team, and then I ended up, I was trying to qualify for the Beijing Olympics. That was sort of my big end goal, which didn't end up happening for me.
And so where does one go from being a professional triathlete? And actually, before you answer that question, let's talk about what it's like being a professional athlete in Canada, especially at that level. You know, when it comes to funding, trying to get funding, you know, is triathlon a well-funded sport in Canada?
Yeah, triathlon's a well-funded sport, but, you know, I also wasn't at the highest level. You know, there are people like Simon who are winning Olympic medals, you know, whereas I'm trying to make national teams. So there's, you know, the funding is very different at both levels. Most of the funding is earmarked towards people who have medal potential and who are likely to make the teams, not people who are trying to qualify for the teams.
Right.
But, you know, I was lucky. I trained with a group with Simon when I was there. We had all the best triathletes in Canada, some of the best triathletes in the world training with us. So, you know, while I wasn't making any money, you know, I had access to incredible resources, to incredible opportunities. And, you know, I'm really, really thankful for that. And it's one of the most significant moments in my life for sure.
So you retire from being a professional triathlete?
Yeah, that's correct. And so in about 2006, I realized I wasn't going to make the Olympic team.
Right.
So I was previously married, and my former wife was going to make the Olympic team. Lauren Groves was her name. And so she was qualifying for Beijing, and Simon was my best friend. He was obviously going to the Olympics. And so I decided to become the national team manager at that time to, you know, in order to be able to spend time with them and continue to help support the team. So I was lucky I was able to transition over into that role. And I did that through Beijing. But at the same time, I was looking for what I wanted to do next. So I applied to law school and luckily got into law school. And so I was, yeah, that was sort of the next stage of my life. I figured I'd become a, you know, desk jockey.
Fantastic. So yeah. So where does the ultra bug come from?
Well, I've always really enjoyed long runs. And when I decided to retire from triathlon, I started going and playing more in the mountains, which is where, ultimately, that's where I'm most at home. I love being in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was playing in the mountains quite a bit and doing more and more long runs. And it always just seemed that the longer the runs got in training, the better I did. And, yeah, I saw a couple pictures in the magazine, and I actually think it was of the Hard Rock 100. This guy, Scott Jurek, who's, you know, world famous yep. ultra runner, and he's actually become quite a good friend of mine as well. And I was like, I absolutely have to do what he's doing. You know, I was reading articles about them, and, you know, so I started slowly, and I ran my first marathon, and, you know, that went quite well. And then I was like, oh, I'd rather, then I went and ran my first mountain marathon. And then from there, I ran my first 50K, and then my first 50 miler, and then 100K, and 100 miler. So I slowly worked my way up through the distances, and unfortunately, being quite successful at, you know, all the races they've done.
Yeah, I see that you do a 50K race at 3 hours and 2 minutes. That's an incredible time.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first marathon I ran 2:29. So, yeah, I've always had pretty decent speed as well. And but, yeah, you know, running on trails and in mountains, you know, time isn't really that relevant because
correct.
Your pace is all over the place. It's very different from running on road races,
yep.
but I still quite enjoy running roads as well. I mean, last year I started, or 2 years ago, I decided I wanted to try to get a world record. So I ran the world's fastest time in a business suit.
You did what?
I ran a marathon in a business suit, and I ran 2:35 at the Victoria Marathon wearing a full business suit with a tie and everything.
That's such a lawyer move.
I was raising money for a legal charity called Access Pro Bono. So I thought it was the most appropriate thing to do. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
That's awesome. Hey, tell us about sky running.
So sky running is a particular type of trail running and mountain running specifically, and it is born of the European mountain running scene, where people would literally sit down, you know, at the local bar and point at the summit and be like, hey, I bet you I can get there and back faster than, you know, the guy sitting beside him. And so it's all about running really, really technical mountain terrain in a, you know, in a really clean style. So it's whatever's the most natural route to take from, you know, town center to a summit. And so it's been big in Europe, and it's slowly been growing. And I'm the director of the Canadian Sky Running Federation. And so, yeah, I was trying to bring that style of running to Canada. So in Europe, you know, there are certain requirements the race has to have. You know, normally it's about above 2,000 meters elevation. We can't really do that too many places in Canada.
Right. You sure can't do that in Essex County.
No, that's right. Yeah, and the same thing in Saskatchewan. We'll have to have the world's first horizontal sky race. So we'll have races called vertical kilometers. So it's basically 1,000 meters elevation gain in 3 to 5 kilometers. So really, really steep terrain. Or we have sky races, which are anywhere from 25 to 42 kilometers. And then we have sky ultras, which are anything longer than a marathon. And they'll have, 4,000 up to 10,000 meters of climbing in them. So really, really gnarly tough races. It can take world-class athletes 8 hours to finish 50K on certain terrain.
So when you talk about measurement, let's just go back a second. It's based on elevation, or is it based on actual linear mileage up a trail?
Yeah, it's more when you become a sky runner, you start worrying more about elevation gain. So when I'm out training, I actually almost never look at how far I've run distance-wise. I look at the elevation on my watch. So I run with an altimeter more than a stopwatch.
So if you're doing a 50K sky running event, that's not 50K wheeled out. That's 50K based on...
Oh, sorry. No. It is 50K wheeled out.
Okay.
But you then also look at what the elevation gain is for the course.
Okay.
And so, just to give people a comparison, if you were to look at, the Boston Marathon, people consider to be a hilly course, it wouldn't even register on, on the type of elevation that we do. It maybe has 100 meters of elevation gain, whereas our races will have 4,000 meters of elevation, 5,000 meters of elevation gain.
So we host a marathon here called the Run for Heroes Marathon in Amherstburg, Ontario.
Yeah.
It's a Boston qualifier.
Yeah.
It's a very intimate course, right? Like there'll be 300 marathoners. It's a beautiful course through wetlands and along the Detroit River and through a historic Fort Malden. 38-foot elevation change.
Yeah.
Or 42K.
Yeah, you would not qualify as a skyrunning race. My apologies. Yeah.
Oh, we'll try next year then.
Yeah. But you also have to take advantage of the terrain that you have.
Correct.
So that's that's what your environment's like, and so that's what makes sense for you to run in. Where I live, we have mountains, so that's where we naturally gravitate towards running. So it'd be contrived just to make a hilly course, just to try to make a hilly course.
Right. So in skyrunning world, is there a North American championship, or does it all kind of elevate back into the UK or into Europe?
Yeah, so this year is the first year that they've really broadened it to North America. So for this year, there's a U.S. series and a Canadian series, and there's also a series in the U.K. and Australia, New Zealand, Japan, France, then quite a few European countries. But the focus of the sport's been in Europe. And so next year, we're going to have a North American series with a North American championships. But this is our first year having individual national races, and it's more of a feeler year, really, mm-hmm. just to figure out what courses should be in it, what the nature of our races should be like, because they have to reflect the local culture and topography as well.
Right. Fascinating. Thanks for explaining skyrunning. I know a lot of listeners would be interested in that, and I wish you all the best with that, and congratulations, and make sure you buy yourself a big lottery ticket this week.
Yeah, well, that's the irony is, in order to get into the race, I had to, it's via lottery. There's only 140 people that are allowed to run Hard Rock.
Right.
And the odds of getting in via lottery are less than 1%. So as we were running off the mountain, Aaron said something about, the odds of getting struck by lightning are less than the lottery. I was like, I won the lottery too. I was like, I'm the luckiest, unlucky person in the world. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Adam, for joining us. And I hope your luck continues.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks. I'd love to hear about your marathon a little bit, too. It sounds lovely. So best of luck to everybody out there running, and keep on trucking. Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye. You're listening to Running Flat Radio on AM 800 CKLW.
Season 2 of The Amazing Race Canada is now in full flight.
It's about time.
Yeah!
Filled with spills.
That is nasty.
Chills.
I can't even move.
And lots of thrills.
This is amazing.
Only 10 teams remain.
We're ready for anything the race brings us.
Let's do this.
Get her done.
And a few are now feeling the pressure.
I don't want to go home.
Medic!
Oh, my God.
The Amazing Race Canada, tonight at 9 on CTV. Brought to you in part by Scotiabank. You're richer than you think.
Mike K. Cook and Lisa Williams.
Every morning.
My favorite morning show.
The Morning Drive.
On the next show, there's a new list out of the dumbest questions you could ask in a restaurant. Do you serve food here is one of them. At 6:20, we're going to tell you what other questions made the list.
And at 7:50, it's the impossible question to pair a weekend passes to the first annual Kingsville Folk Music Festival happening at Lakeside Park.
The Morning Drive. Weekday mornings 5 till 9 on AM 800.
These are the final days of Leon's famous Don't Pay a Cent event. Visit Leon's today and save up to 15% on select sofas and sectionals, up to 50% on Sealy mattresses, and up to $500 on Samsung curved TVs. Plus, you don't pay a cent for delivery on almost everything in our showroom. Best of all, you can pay absolutely nothing, not even the taxes or fees, until 2016 OAC. Leon's Don't Pay a Cent event ends Tuesday. Don't miss it.
It's that time of the year again, summer. Hit the patio at the City Grill for their recharge menu with tons of tempting new options for lunch and dinner. Visit thecitygrillwindsor.com.
Now the forecast from the AM 800 Weather Center. Clearing tonight, a low of 13. Mainly cloudy tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers in the afternoon, a high of 21. 30% chance of showers early Wednesday night, then clearing, a low of 11. Mix of sun and cloud Thursday, high of 25. Lots of sunshine in store for Friday, a high of 27. Once again, tonight clearing, a low of 13. Tomorrow mainly cloudy, a 30% chance of showers in the afternoon, and a high of 21.
AM 800 CKLW, the information station, where you're always only minutes away from the latest news, talk, and opinion. Helping you achieve your personal best. This is Running Flat Radio with Chris Yuzinski on AM 800.
And welcome back to Running Flat Radio. It is now time this week for our weekly feature.
Running Flat Radio presents the Canadian Running Magazine Report on AM 800.
Editor-in-Chief Michael Doyle from Canadian Running Magazine. How are you, sir?
I am doing excellent. How are you, Chris?
I am awesome. I am
excellent.
Wonderful. You know, we just had a guest on, and Adam was just talking to us about the Skyrunning series that's apparently coming to Canada. And I've always heard about it, but, you know, being so flat here in Essex County, we don't really get out to too many mountain runs. And I was explaining to him that, you know, we have a 38-foot elevation change over 42 kilometers, making us one of the fastest marathons in the world. But, you know, and you know, the sky running, what was the minimum, Carla, 2,000 or 4,000? 4,000 to 5,000-foot elevation had to be the minimum. So we would definitely not qualify for that this year.
No, they have a tough time finding places in Canada. I know there's a couple in Quebec, and there's certainly a whole bunch out west. But the sky running series is pretty cool. I've been following it for a couple of years, and I actually did an interview with one of the founders, Laurie Van Houten, last year for the magazine, because they also do this pretty neat series where they do stair climbs in the tallest buildings in the world. So, okay. I was asking her about, like, why the CN Tower wasn't part of their group, and they've actually been trying to get the CN Tower as one of them. So, but they do the Empire State Building and a bunch of buildings in Asia as well. So it's pretty cool. They're a pretty cool group.
And one of the things that we were going to talk about was North Face.
Yeah, last weekend I was up, and speaking of running up a mountain, I mean, I guess Collingwood, I guess Blue Mountain is almost a mountain. It's, I don't know if it's quite 1,000 feet, but they call it a mountain. It felt like a mountain running up and down the ski hill. But North Face, they have an endurance challenge series that they do all around North America, and they actually even have one in Costa Rica as well. They lay out these really crazy, pretty gnarly trail courses. They do a whole weekend of events, everything from 50 miles right down to a 5K. And I did the half marathon distance on Sunday with a group of friends. And it was really challenging. It had rained the night before, and it was pretty slick coming down the side of that mountain or giant hill. And took a couple of spills. It was a lot of fun, though. Trail running is a total different animal. I mean, I imagine you talked about it quite a bit with Adam. He's doing these, you know, crazy 100-mile events that are just challenging every aspect of your mind and body. And I mean, what he does is unbelievable. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah, and you know, we had Karnazes on, you know, a couple months ago on the show, and he was up in Toronto launching the series for North Face, and he's such an interesting guy. I mean, he mostly rode, but he does a tremendous amount of trail, and you know, trail is a completely different animal. And and I know that in next month we have Nancy Hobbs on, who is a legend in female trail running in the United States, a pioneer in it. And those are some of the specific questions that we actually want to get in with her, is how that entire sport has changed over the last 20, 30 years. And it has dramatically, where you have some decent money in sponsorships in there now, and you have large companies like North Face that are making inroads. I mean, looking into Canada to promote these products.
I think these companies, they see that they're these incredible athletes and really interesting stories. And it's a way to kind of grow from a grassroots movement too. Because, I mean, you have these events like Western States in California, or like the Hard Rock 100 in Colorado and Pikes Peak and whatnot. And they have these great histories, and each year is this epic event, and, you know, all kinds of crazy stories, like, you know, Adam getting hit by lightning. I mean, that one's going to go down as one of the weirdest trail running stories in the last few years. And yeah, they're just like their own little, you know, epic. So I think that it's something that certainly if you're coming from a kind of traditional road running background, you do 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons, that it's usually the trail events are in the summertime. They're a bit of a different animal. There's something that are kind of a different kind of full body and mental challenge as well. And they're a lot of fun. I think there's something that everyone should do in the summertime.
But also they're intimate events.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not going to line up with 35,000 of your best friends on that starting line and run up a mountain,
no.
Right? I mean, they're more equated to like a small marathon, like we have with Run for Heroes, or a lot of the events that we put on, where they're very, very intimate.
Totally.
Where you can see the front of the pack and you can see the back of the pack.
Which, I mean, as you know, has a real appeal. I mean, as much as I love lining up at, you know, New York or Chicago with, you know, 45,000, 50,000 of my closest friends, it's really fun to stand in a small group and you're all going out there together, and you get this kind of, you know, like kind of like it's like a community event. Afterwards, you usually there's some sort of like barbecue or a little festival. Everyone's hanging out. It's kind of like camping. It's a really nice. It's nice to bring your family out too. I think it's a different side of running, which I really appreciate.
100%, and we've always marketed the Run for Heroes as a boutique marathon. And I know that, you know, some of the race directors in the United States kind of laugh like, "What's a boutique marathon?" It's like, well, you know what it is, guys. It's small. It's intimate. Everyone knows the race director by his first name. You know, and it's very, very intimate that way. And it's through a small town. And it's a very scenic course. So that's why we kind of coined that phrase boutique marathon, was because of that. But yeah, there is a huge market in marathoning and half marathoning, where people say, you know what, I'm just not going to fight 27,000 people in, you know, in Corral, you know, double F, you know, today, and try to sidestep people for the first, you know, 28 minutes of my run.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I mean, I run a lot of events, as you know, every year, and I like to do a couple of big ones, but most of the events that I like to do are the sort of smaller community style events, because you get, you know, first of all, everyone gets across the finish start line within a couple of seconds, and that's really cool. It's not like the slow march to the start. And also, it's, you know, you can tell that everyone's there for a great reason. All the volunteers, all the, you know, the race organizers, people like yourself, race directors, you know, you really personally care and put a personal touch on the event, and I really appreciate that.
You know, we think so. I mean, that's what our aim is, right? And we hope that it shines through, you know, at the end of the day, that people actually see that a little personal touches are actually in there and looked after. So, you know, we're, what, a year away from the Commonwealth Games in
Pan Am's is a year away. We're only a couple of weeks away from the Commonwealth Games in Calgary. Glasgow, Scotland. Just had Adam Campbell on the mind there. He's from Calgary. And I mean, I think we've got a good team. There's quite a few athletes in track and field. Lanny Marchand, of course, is running the marathon. There are a couple of weird omissions, and we actually just put an article up this evening about it. people who either didn't make the qualifying standard, because Canada actually has quite aggressive qualifying standards for international events. People like Nate Brandon, who, you know, everyone knows from going to a couple of Olympics, and he's one of our best track runners probably ever, and he didn't make a qualifying standard this year. So it's kind of too bad that Team Canada doesn't send our best, you know, fill out the entire squad in every single event. So we don't have anybody for the men's 1500 meter, which is really sad because that's a really great event. And we don't have anyone for the men's marathon because Eric Gillis and Reed Coolset and Rob Watson, who all had qualifying times, just decided that they were going to go for, like, as we were talking about, kind of the big city, fall marathons, trying to run a faster time, which I can respect because this is their livelihood and they're trying to, you know, get that sub 2:10, Canadian record time. And it's tough to do that at a world championships in August. But I think it's too bad that we're not going to send a full complement in every single event. But I do think that there are quite a few exciting runners that are going to be there, and I think it's worthwhile tuning in. I think the CBC is going to be showing it. I hope live. If not live, there'll be a rebroadcast in the evening. So it's going to be a fun event. It's always cool to watch track and field and the big marathon events on television
in August.
In August this year.
Yeah.
Pan Am Games are next year, and I have a sneaking suspicion that Canada will have a full team in Toronto next year.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will.
So yeah.
That's wonderful. Michael, thank you very much for joining us this week.
And we'll
talk to you next week for sure. You are listening to Running Flat Radio on AM 800 CKLW. For more information about Running Flat and what we do and all of our events that are coming up, go to runningflat.com. We always need volunteers for events as well. We're going to do a show in a couple of weeks that actually revolves around volunteers and how important they are. And without them, we would never be able to put on running events. But you know what? We'll talk to you next week and keep running.
And that's all I have to say about that.